Hour number two of the Dr. Future Show straight ahead, KSEO Santa Cruz.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSEO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Well, in the last hour, we were talking about portals and black holes and that sort of thing, and how that actually works. Possibly why, when two black holes collide, light is emitted. What's that all about? Very interesting scientific questions of today. In this hour, however, we're delving more into the portal phenomena through more, quasi-fiction or fantasy, perhaps a little bit involved. So we'll find out. In this hour, we have Kaya Dorius in the studios, who's a local producer of media. We've had the pleasure of knowing her for many years now as she's evolved her concepts and ideas for storytelling using television.
A very talented performer, storyteller, songwriter, and now writer of TV shows and fictions. I'm very happy to welcome you to our show, Kaya.
Yes, thanks for coming, Kaya.
Oh, this is amazing to be here with everybody. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, here's an interesting synchronicity, if you will. In the last hour, we were talking about portals, and we had one caller from Scotts Valley who talked about how these portals could open up into other dimensions. And other things could come through them. Now, I understand you've taken that concept of portals into the television realm here. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I've been working on something called the Mythic Series. It's a TV show that we're making a pilot for soon. And it's been a long time of development.
Now, the portal, how did you perceive a portal? What was your understanding of it as a storyteller?
You know, I mean, I think it's a classic motif. It's the portal, the thing that takes you from one place to another.
In this case, from Santa Cruz?
In this case, we're hoping to use local physics lab, either at Stanford or UCSC.
Opens a real portal?
We could try, can't we?
Yeah, well, it's a TV show, right? We can try.
In the TV show, it happens.
Okay, of course.
So,
so you do open one in the TV. You work with a real lab and off we go to another dimension. Is it like this one? Is it like three dimensions with sight and sound and senses and everything?
Yeah, they're playing with a Hadron Collider and a freak accident happens and a portal to another world on another dimension happens because, you know, they're learning about string theory in different dimensions and so they find another world and the secret is it's called Mirth. They find Myth Earth, the world of human imagination that exists on another dimension.
Ah, so it actually is relevant to our existence here, like it's the mythic characters of who we are, so to speak.
Well, it's animated from the thought forms of the collective unconscious, so all the gods and heroes and remembered ones live there. I call it like mythology 3.0, and they're animated from the thought forms of the human imagination.
Kind of like the Jungian concept of the collective unconscious.
Absolutely draws from that. So they're living, it's kind of like I believe in fairies, and so they're real. They're living independently, kind of having their own trip on this place, kind of the realm of the dead in a way. I mean, the realm of the remembered ones, you know, I can't think of the Greek word for it, but...
This is similar to the Greek mythology then, in the sense that there's the realm of the gods and the mythic characters that really are running things, and then there's the poor mortals, i.e. us, that are subject to their whims.
I mean, I would say in a way it's like converse, it's kind of like both, because we create them, and in this scenario, they don't really create us, really, the humans create them.
Humans create the gods?
Sure, in this scenario, yeah.
Hmm.
But is it the chicken or the egg?
Well, do they realize that?
Is it the goose or the golden egg?
So that leaves itself open to lots of stories, it seems, once you open up this portal. How many characters live on this other world? Is it a city or a country town? Or
basically, it's Mirth. It's like a mini Earth. And really, the way that the story's framed, it's really more dealing with
mini Earth.
The ancient, a little bit more of anything before, I would say, 1900. So it was kind of, you know, I'm working with an Academy Award nominated friend named James Strauss, who was helping me write the pilot and did help me making a fictional world. And I know that you talked to some writers recently. It was, is a little problematic because you have to have it make sense. So
something we can relate to anyway. Twilight Zone played with the use of 19th century pastoralism. Willoughby, next stop, Willoughby. A train where the guy takes his commuter train from New York City in modern day times and wakes up on the train and it's 100 years ago. And it's the ideal village where he dreamt of as a child, of heaven on earth.
I love time travel, you know, all those types of things. I love historical, I love history, you know, and this program is really birthed out of a fascination and a love of history and the past of humanity. And, you know, a story like this, okay, the world, and it has everyone, it has all the gods and heroes, like, it could be a cornucopia of what's going on. It's not like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure where, you know, he's just dropped in and it's just a bunch of characters. You know, there's a very specific thread that, you know, it took me 3 years to develop.
Is there a heroine or a hero?
There's 10 main characters.
10 characters.
Yeah. It's a
cast of 10.
It's a comparative cultural mythology in a way. So it's kind of based in Greek mythology as a little bit of a base because that's where a lot of us
We've got 1 minute before a break, just going to say. But, you know, it's interesting there because there are 9 characters in the Enneagram. Uh-huh. There are 12 in their astrology chart, basic 12 different archetypes of humanity or 9. And you're coming with 10. Which is right in the ballpark there.
Well, I had 12, actually. And, and part of it, and there's still maybe 12, you know. When the series gets fully produced, which is what we're wanting, and we're thinking...
Is it the birthing phase now, or...?
Oh, baby, it's crowning. It's like, get it out!
All right. Well, listen, we got to go to a break, but we'll find out more about this crowning process after
a
little break.
With Kaya Dorius. Be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We have in the studio with us Kaya Dorius, a local writer, storyteller, mythmaker, filmmaker now, taking her ideas into the TV and video realms. A mythic story about, it's a mythic story about mythology. It says very Joseph Campbellian elements, I think, which we all love. But I want to ask you the origins of this story of discovering this other world.
Yeah, when we first saw you, you were down at Community Television Station and you had a whole bunch of amazing, beautiful, mythic characters, that people in costume, and they were performing drama and singing, and they were on a ship, and you had so much going on. Tell us about these characters. Like, who are the characters that you've been choosing, and why did you bring them into your story?
Yeah, how did they come in? What was the first character?
Sure. You know, the idea started as I wanted to do a YouTube channel and do kind of like a muse. And I wanted to do poetry. And then it kind of morphed into wanting to showcase different topics in consciousness and give people access to kind of like, these are the people in your neighborhood, and be kind of like this comedy show where, boom, we're in this adventure. Boom, this, we're in this adventure. Boom, we're in this adventure. And Scott Servine, a local director, he said, at one point, you need a place where the characters, you know, where are you? Who are you? What? Because I was on a pirate ship, and I had this thing called the Wheel of Wonder. And
on
I
would, the pirate ship?
Yeah, yeah. And it was really campy. It was silly. You know, the Snake of Flame rise, right, Snake of Flame. And then the Dragon of the Sun rode around the snake of flame. And, you know, so dragon's going around the snake, and we're spinning the wheel. And there's topics like Buddhism. And then, boom, we go to a Buddhist monastery, and then we're talking to teachers about Buddhism. And it's okay to be gay, and, you know, talking to people about their experiences and
all a cast of 10 talking about all this stuff.
Oh no. This was just simply the origin of mythic. This is how it started, and then it morphed over time into something that was completely, doesn't even look like the original template at all.
As more people are added, their visions combine with yours to create something new.
Not really. It wasn't really a matter of other people coming into the project and helping with the writing so much as it was...
Acting it out, maybe? Or did you build base character?
Well, did a pilot. I did 2 pilots, actually. Since Origin, it has been 5 years. So it has gone through a lot of peer mutations. But at the end, now, what we have is a fantasy educational series that is of a different scale. It's of a different type of program. It's something that's like a full-blown fantasy script for a television show now that is not really campy, and it's not really about you know, local people going on a boat. And
we have a caller.
Huh?
Yeah. Stephen would like to ask you a little something about your shooting schedule, I guess, or your shooting location.
Is there any place in the county that you particularly think is mythic? Do you like to...
Oh, that's a really good question.
And hi, Stephen. You're talking to Kaya Dorius.
Kaya.
You have a question?
Yeah.
Hi.
Kaya. Hi.
Hi.
It's Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Steve, you know me, Oliver.
Well, go ahead, Steve. You have a question for Kaya?
The question is, are you thinking about Santa Cruz for a location, or are you thinking about somewhere more along the lines of abroad, like Australia, somewhere?
Funny you should mention Australia.
Does the crew that signs up for this get to travel to exotic fun locations for shooting?
Well, you know, it really, you know, the pilot will be filmed on two boats in Santa Cruz because, you know, when the physics student falls through the portal, through the wormhole, he becomes his mythical counterpart. So, yeah, well, back to the story. Yeah, the physics student it's really funny, and this is the first time I'm saying it, but he takes a selfie in front of the wormhole.
Oh, gets sucked in when he does it?
He sure does. And, you know, he goes through the wormhole and becomes his mythical counterpart, which is Odysseus of the Odyssey, and he plops out into the sea.
Really? Does he know he's Odysseus? I mean, is he conscious of this, or he discovers it in the process of becoming him?
In the wormhole, his genetic or whatever, he encodes into Odysseus. Oh. He completely forgets he was a physics student.
He joins
the world of Mirth.
It's sort of like waking up in a dream. He's now a dream character named Odysseus. And does he have the voyage that Odysseus has? I mean, how much did you go into the classic myth of Odysseus?
I would love to answer that question. And to finish with this beautiful angel, Steve, we will be filming the pilot in Santa Cruz and maybe San Jose, hopefully at Stanford, and then an apartment. As for the whole series, ideally, whoever produces it, however it happens, it's going to be their choice and collective choice. I imagine, ideally, we would shoot on location, especially. We'd probably go to the Mediterranean. But, you know, it could be done in a studio. It might be able to be done in L.A. or locally.
A lot of options. Huh?
Yeah, it's, you know.
If it takes off, options are many.
Thank you for asking that.
Or when it takes off.
Thank you for taking my question. And I am looking, with so many of us are looking so forward to this and so exciting. Bless you. Thank you, guys.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Gracias.
So it seems like you're kind of activating the community a little bit here.
Yes.
How many of your great performers are local in Santa Cruz and or in the Bay Area?
Oh, Bay Area. You know, two of them are coming. Two of the actors are coming from L.A. and then
Half, of course, we must have L.A.
They're pursuing their acting careers.
Mm. Oh, good.
Heather Christie.
They take it seriously.
They're quite the folks.
Yeah, I bet.
So yeah, we do have an amazing cast of actors. And in terms of activating the community, it is, if this, through the pilot process, we've got the kid and then you got the adult, right? Mm. So in the pilot process, yeah, there's going to be a lot of fun and activation. We're having a funding campaign actually starting today.
Right.
Woo!
That kind of inspired us to you on here.
Yeah, Indiegogo.
Yeah, an Indiegogo, and it's going up tonight, this evening, and then there's going to be a party. You know, yeah, so there are ways of activation, but on a larger scale, if the series gets funded, it is going to bring a whole consciousness culture to the public that I don't think has really been shown yet. So it will bring musicians, it will bring kind of the nectar of the...
Well, we are an artistic community. We have a lot of amazing people here. It seemed natural that you'd engage some of the brilliance that you've managed to attract to yourself.
Yeah, I want to give people a little idea of some of the things that Kaya Dorius has been involved in over the years, because she's a fantastic collector of talent. It just blows me away the way she has... We first got to know her over the years at this annual party that she held with friends, but she was very much one of the movers and shakers party we called the Mothership Party, which turned into an annual event called the Heart Bliss Kiss. And in these events, the most amazing, extraordinary performers, both the singers, musicians, dancers, hoopers, fire dancers, people came together basically for a community party, and it was artists performing for artists, and it was such a nurturing weekend. It was a camping weekend that was just full of workshops and performances, like all day, all night, people just giving their gifts to each other in a really relaxed way. And
a personal festival
that was just so important to all of the participants. It's just such a source of rejuvenation and co-creation. Mm. And
kind of help create stages where the local community could showcase their talents as well. Allow people to shine in whatever way they chose to.
Yeah, and of course, you know, working with a lot of the other local luminaries, because, you know, everybody, you are a magnet and an activator of fabulous community. I mean, I don't want to leave anybody out, but they're...
Is that the cast or the crew?
Yeah, the caliber of the talent that you have yourself and that you collect for these performances is just awesome.
Well, thank you. I'm hoping that it translates into, if this show is good enough, that it will be produced. And yeah, I mean, I'm constantly blown away by our festival culture and circuit and seeing the performers. Like, I mean, and that's why it's so important to me to try to bring them out, you know, even though I perform myself and I love it, you know, like Maria Stark took the lead of, she's taking the lead of Mythic.
Wow.
Yeah. And
great choice.
She is
quite a mythic magician herself. Yeah.
Quite a songstress.
Yeah. You know, and and that's, I guess, just an example of the level of mastery needs to be, you know, not needs to be, but what a blessing, you know, it would be for the world to be able to witness some of this. We have had these insulated parties and stuff where, you know, it's like, you're going, whoa, this is better than what I'm seeing on the world stage in terms, you know, this is as good as the greats. We get to witness it. And what a gift that is, you know, and we are all like, wow, this is such a gift, you know. So my part of that, the impetus is to like, okay, these people need to share their gifts with the world. And so, you know, the series would be a way to, and then people could be blown away at the level of dancers and
music. How much quality is actually comes
Yeah, they'll
through.
Be like, yeah. where did these people come from?
Yes. Well, this is as great as what's on the major channels.
All right, folks, we got to go to a little break, and we're going to be back after the news. This is the Dr. Future Show. We'll
Future.
Be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Kaya Dorias in this hour about her new media project, a television series that connects our realm with a mythic realm through the convenient Santa Cruz portal.
The local portal. Local portal to become immortal.
Yes, yes. And was the original idea here in Santa Cruz, Kaya Dorias, or did it happen here, or did it happen at the top of a mountain somewhere, or did you have like a peak experience that brought this through to connect these mythic realms with everyday knick-knack reality?
Well, you know, I can't really say that it was some like a lightning bolt.
It was
a seed, you know. Yeah. It came from an improv that I was doing about the Huntress, about Diana. Mm. Like, I am the Huntress. With my arrows of love, I fly like a dove. Are you one who speaks in riddles? Are you one who talks in dreams? Are you one who climbs the streams of life, avoiding toil and strife?
She's definitely in touch with another dimension.
It actually was a poem that didn't make complete sense.
But it just came through.
It was like, come to my bosom, for we have tales to spin. Of, you know, from there, the Artemis was the thing that was awoken, the Huntress. You know, and the show was called The Mythic. First it was The Mystic Huntress, and then it was The Mythic Huntress.
Mystic to mythic.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then it became the simplicity of mythic.
The Huntress is just the beginning, the entry point, if you will, to this world.
Well, the Huntress is the guardian of, she's like the totem archetype of the, holding the energy of the show. She's the mother of the character Maria is playing, probably called Mariah, that is an orphan. When Odysseus falls, when Odie, the physics student, falls through and becomes Odysseus, he goes into the sea, and then there's just a boat. And he goes to the boat and he discovers this woman on the boat who is kind of an orphan amnesiac. And she is totally freaked out to see him. And
he suddenly appears out of nowhere, essentially, from her point of view. Huh?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a little bit, there's a little more to it, because the physics student has like salmon jerky in his hands, in his pocket. And
she's hungry.
And the salmon turns into... It's mythical self, in the portal. It turns into a big salmon, and then the phone he has spins into an iPhone, I mean, into a magical compass. Oh. And the fish eats the phone, and then the fish drops on the deck of the ship, and Odysseus falls into the sea. Now, she doesn't see the Odysseus fall into the sea. All she knows is that a giant salmon just fell from the sky. And she's living in the classical world, and she doesn't know who she is or really why she's there. She's just been out at sea for a year.
And this happens to her.
And she's trying to survive. She doesn't know how to sail, per se. And so she's just been reading all these books, all these classics, because she's on an escape boat from Alexandria, Egypt, actually. She's on an old boat, because in Alexandria, they used to, you know, take everyone's books. They would actually literally pirate everyone's books. So she has been reading all the classics. So, and then she finds this salmon. She's like, "Oh, fish, tell Phineas, have you ever?" You know, she has a pet mouse, and she opens up the fish to eat it, and inside she finds the compass, which is an incredibly designed compass, already designed by an amazing artist named Mark Lee.
Really? And this is an actual thing you built for the, a prop, if you will?
Well, he built it independently. It's called the Chio, and just so happened to be perfect.
It really works as a compass?
Well, it's actually, it's like a not radiation, it's a device used to block you from electromagnetic shielding thing, but it looks really cool.
Wow.
It has sacred geometry. So she touches the compass, and one of the apps on the compass, it opens, and the app on the compass comes to life in terms of in a hologram. And it's kind of like her Siri. It's like the fairy godmother. It's played by Michaela Ivey, who's an incredible wordician comedian in the Bay Area who's about to blossom her comedy career.
Like a cosmic Google of some sort? Or I mean, is it, or is it a navigational? Is it a, I mean, what do they use it for?
Well, in the story, she is an app. She's simply the app that the other physics student was looking at on his phone when it fell through the portal. So that's why she's there present. But she does kind of act as Siri. She acts as kind of like the intercessor between the realms. But Mariah thinks she's going crazy and asks her to leave. And she thinks she's been at sea too long. She must be hallucinating. So she kind of buries the compass, and she soon meets... She actually sees another boat sailing. She's pining away for the, because she just sees another human, and then she sees another boat, and she gets on her little boat and goes towards it. So it begins there. She meets Bridget, who is on this boat.
It's a woman on another ship in the sea.
And in the meantime, Odysseus comes on her boat. So they both come back because Bridget has been attacked by pirates. And she's sailing the Sea of Mananin. So Bridget is this whole secondary character. She was one of the most widely worshipped deities. She's the Celtic goddess.
So they all jump on one boat together and have adventures? Yeah, which boat do they choose, I wonder?
They go to they go to a local Phoenician port. This is this party town, and they end up in a really funny way meeting the three more characters.
You never know about those party towns.
And then they all go to the Oracle at Delphi to determine
after the party
the question, what is the greatest treasure in Mirth? Well, you know, they have different reasons for wanting to go on the journey to the Oracle.
Well, I guess they want to remember who they are if they have this other world that they went through and they forgot, and they have to remember somehow. So
nobody thinks that they've forgotten.
Really? They all think they know everything?
No, they are those mythic characters, except for Odysseus.
Oh.
Kiara doesn't know who her parents are, and that's a whole unraveling of the story. So her mother, back to the basics, was her mother had an illicit love affair with Mars, and they were going to get in trouble kind of in Mirth because she's supposed to be a virginal goddess. And so they went in the ocean and hid on a ship for a few weeks. And then Mars left and abandoned her.
Wow.
And the mother died, basically drowned in the sea of sorrow because she was so heartbroken. So her mother's in the underworld, and she doesn't really know that or who she is until she goes to the Oracle at Delphi.
And wakes her up to the bigger reality.
And she says, your mother is in the underworld. And, you know, it is, like, back to your son question, you know, it is a parallel of the Odyssey in some ways. It's really a hybrid of, you know, I didn't intend to make it like the never-ending story. It just was like, you know, like that, the classic, is it Michelangelo or whoever said, you chip away, that the rock chips itself away. Like, writing the story was very much like that, where the piece really did kind of unravel itself. It wasn't so much me imposing, but it was like this creative dance between me studying history and mythology, and then it rising to meet, and people, even, you know, the characters you were asking earlier, like, how did I choose which mythological characters were in it? You know, because it was a difficult question. It was like, oh man, I want to show everybody. I want to show African mythology. I want to show Indonesian mythology. I want to show this and this and this and this. And then so it's like how to weave it in a way that really is streamlined and makes sense. And
So how did you figure that out? Based on actual characters that came in your life at the right time, perhaps? Or
some of it was, yeah. Like I knew that I wanted a Chinese or an Asian goddess, right? And I didn't know who it was.
So you went to the goddess temple? No.
I went and visited. There is one here, you know.
We actually have a mythology of goddess temples in this area.
Actually, you know, this is why it took so long, and then I met a woman that was going to be an actor in one of the earlier versions, and I said, well, if you could be a character, this is the way it happens sometimes. Sometimes it was pure inspiration on my part. Sometimes it was collective inspiration. And she said, well, if I was going to be a mythological character, I want to be a warrior goddess. I want to be
Your huntress.
Mulan, you know, I want to be strong. I want to be, and I was like, oh man, well, you know, or like Kuan Yin, you know, that's a good one, but she's kind of gentle.
Not like the Hunger Games.
And you know, it was a miracle actually. Like, and there has been a lot of miracles involved in this process. So I looked it up. I looked up a thing, and this thing popped up, Mazu. And I was like, whoa, and it was perfect. And Mazu is actually the most widely worshipped female deity in China. And she was a real historical character that lived around the time of Buddha. And
she was a warrior?
She was a warrior, and she was an ascended, you know, she was said to have been an ascended, that she actually ascended, like Christ was said to have ascended, on a rainbow. She had really deep psychic vision, so there were stories. And she's the guardian of sailors. So you know, she became famous in the mythology for doing this thing where her brother and her father were out on a fishing trip and they were drowning in the sea and she was in another realm. And through her activity in being in the other realm so deeply, she was able to save them.
But create circumstances that resulted in them.
She got woken up and then one of them died and then the other came back to say, hey, my sister saved me. But she studied Taoism. She didn't take a husband. And she's said to be an incarnation Kuan Yin. So these historical characters have come in a really complex and guided way.
You think they're real?
Do I think they're real? Well,
fantasy to reality. Well, it is a eternal question with no right or wrong.
I mean, you know, Plato said, you know, it's like back to Plato and the ideals, you know, it's like, does something exist on another dimension if enough people believe in it? I guess that's kind of the concept, you know, and that's the concept of all religion, you know, of like, that's what the Buddhists and stuff kind of say is, you know, you pray to this source and then there's all these people kind of feeding it and then it becomes its own benevolent
source. It's a self-fulfulling prophecy in a way.
But who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I'd say that I'm in the mystery on that
one. Yes, it's fantasy plus reality equals this.
Just because I am into it doesn't mean I believe that that's exactly true.
All right, okay,
we've got to go to a break.
Everybody.
We're going to get back with some particulars about the actual production.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, welcome back to the last segment of the show today with Kari Dorius. And I think you'll agree with me that when she's describing these mythic stories, I almost feel like they're coming alive in my consciousness, like I'm seeing them.
Oh, I love meeting new mythic characters. Myth is so powerful.
Yeah, and I love the way it's coming alive just by hearing it. Now, I can only imagine something you produce in media would bring it even more alive. And how are you planning to do that? Your television, is that the first form of media you're exploring for getting these stories out?
Well, that's the big hope, yeah. We just are raising $25,000.
Like a crowdsourcing campaign?
Yeah, it's on Indiegogo. If we can manage to do that, or even less than that, I have a little savings I can put in if I really need to.
So you're all hands in for yourself, but you'd like the community to help support you on making this a real show. And you have the script together.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, you just need a little of the money. As they say, money provides a little oxygen for making it go.
Yeah, you know, if everybody donates a little bit, and we have all these cool gift backs. I have Guatemalan jewelry that is incredible, seed jewelry that helps seed. No, I don't have seed jewelry.
Bead
that supports Guatemalan women, you know, and there's other things you can see on the funding campaign.
Okay, so the funding campaign is going to be on Indiegogo. It's called the Mythic Series. Yeah, and there's also a website
tonight,
called
yeah.
themythicseries.com.
Themythicseries.com.
Right.
I got a website. Right.
This is so new.
There's a lot to explore there on the website. It's beautiful art. I mean, the production values of this are just beautiful. I can't wait to see it.
The Mythic Series?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, I really want to give you a moment here to invoke myth. The power of myth, I know, is such a driver in what you're doing. And just give us a little bit of how this works for you. Where is the magic?
Sure. You know, the thing that comes to mind is, you know, there was an interview with Joseph Campbell where he talked about, he was asked, what is the myth? Because the function of myth in the ancient world was really important. Also, they didn't have so much entertainment, right? So the question can kind of be raised, why is it important today? And I think really it's like an orientation. The function of myth, Joseph Campbell says, is to realize that you're interacting with the mystery of being, like the mysterium tremendous, like the tremendous mystery that we all as individuals are on our own hero's journey, on our own epic quest. And that is the gift of our lives, you know, is that we get to unearth the treasure within. And it is a journey, and it can be a painful journey, for life is not easy, as they say, you know. So this show, in a way, is like, I think there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, leaving religion or looking for meaning and lost, or, you know, needing support. And in a way, it's like this powerful template that allows to give a context for meaning and give practical tools. Like, as these mythic characters are traversing through the mythic world, they split up in pursuit of their individual quest into small groups. You know, what is the most valuable? So they have this debate at the end of the Oracle of Delphi, and they go off. And when one people says, the Oracle of Delphi doesn't know anything, she couldn't even get us a straight answer. Who else is the most wisest person in Mirth around here? Let's go ask them. So they go to Lao Tzu. So then we meet Lao Tzu, and Lao Tzu teaches us about Taoism, you know, and so Taoism, you know, a lot of people are like, what's Taoism, you know?
So they actually learn Taoism by this chapter? I mean, by the end of it, you'll understand. Well, you'll have a clue anyway.
Right? I mean, it's a 22-hour program. Yeah, that small group, they go to Lao Tzu and they're initiated into Taoism. And at the end of it, most of them are like, three out of the four are like, well, this guy sucks too, you know, because they're not ready for the message of Taoism. But through that we learn, you know, and so it's like
how does learning about the myths of the ancient world serve us in the future? What are you gaining from this process?
Integration, perhaps, between the past and the present?
Well, yeah, Joseph Campbell says myths are designed to put our mental system in accord with our body system, and then our body system in accord with nature. So really, it's all about harmony, right? It's all about what can we use in this modern world when we're so tied up in knots, right? In many ways, health-wise or whatever. How do we get a solution? You know, Michaela says the solution to help unravel our twists and turns to become someone that's truly happy and also free of extraneous thoughts that doesn't serve us, or extraneous habits that don't serve us.
Get in the way.
And storytelling is classically used as a tool for this. It's not news. And even movies do this, but in this really dynamic container that we have, it's way more juicy. It's way more, it gives you a lot more to chew on than your average TV show. And we are wanting and seeing that this will actually be produced on Netflix or something. I mean, it's that good, you know?
You go from entertainingly looking for clues to following your cues.
Yeah, following your cues.
Yes. Yeah. Looking for clues, Game of Thrones comes to mind. But there could be a spiritual element in, like, the Game of Thrones, where they suddenly start discovering who they really are beneath these games that they're playing.
Yeah, you know, I can't even watch that. And that's part of the reason I wanted to make an educational program. I hear that it's, you know, it's similar in terms of complexity to Mythic, but I really believe in conscious edutainment.
Yeah, so.
And conscious entertainment, I don't have a high threshold for violence myself, you know, and that type of violence, that level of violence that's on shows like that or The Hunger Games. It's like, that's part of my deep inspiration for writing this, is like, God, let's have like cool, and it's not like it has to be PG, you know, it can still be PG-13, but let's not have something that's disturbing that's going to give us intense nightmares.
But you'll come away feeling better from this. In a sense, right?
Yeah, you're
more understanding. You'll understand Lao Tzu.
Yeah, and people going like, well, shit, maybe I should try some meditation, or, you know, maybe what's calling me into the greatness of my life? So
what's awakening you to your potential?
You know, people asking themselves the question, what is my great treasure? What is, you know,
what's my superpower?
What is my superpower? Absolutely. You know, and it's all about improving the quality of life. That's the point.
And right. Having maybe your friends recognize you have superpowers too, and you recognize theirs, and things happen from there.
Well, and it sounds like Mythic is about superpower beings, and how some of the ways that they have to figure life out is not exactly in the superpower range. Like, they have a lot of searching that they need to do for their own wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of the storyline is Mirth is dying because the characters are being forgotten. Mm. So they've lost their superpowers, really. And the Mythic world is reduced to kind of trading. And
kind of like Woody in the Toy Story, where he's being forgotten for the new toy that's coming out, the Space Ranger.
Yeah, I mean, they're having to traverse their world.
They're dying for lack of attention.
In a way where they don't get the benefit of being able to snap their fingers and miraculously manifest something. Hmm. So, you know, they have their own, you know. But it is about within that finding, you know. It's not about having a superpower where you can actually see, you know, you can actually be invisible, or you can actually have a superpower. It's actually like the superpower of overcoming your own inner resistances, and your superpower of, in the case of the characters, you know, overcoming the demons. You know, there's a thing where the demons come in and Mars is mounting. You know, Mars is a big part of this piece. He's the big enemy, and he's trying to kill Mirth basically through making humans forget the world and, you know, forget the mythologies. So they're mounting they have to respond to Mars attacking them. In essence, it's about giving people tools and a template to get through psychological issues, personal obstacles, and persevere, calling on the wisdom of the ancients, you know, and also becoming educated about the characters. Meet Einstein, Tesla, you know, there's this.
They have access to some of the brilliant minds of all time, huh?
They do, and it's kind of inadvertently, you know, it's kind of like we all fall into, I never really planned on writing something like this, you know, but like following your cues, you're picking up the pieces as they come. Yeah. And that's my deep prayer about this show, is like hoping, praying, and feeling that the grace of knowing that, you know, we really can't do this pilot without some support from everybody, even just a little support, $10, $20, you know, for people that think that we should have entertainment like this, of this quality, that people can.
Well, that's why we have you on here, my dear, because we think you're wonderful, and we love our community, the bigger community that we're part of, discovers you too and sees how delightful you are.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate this. This is is so really cool.
Brilliantly delightful.
All right. Well, we're going to be checking out this Indiegogo campaign and really looking forward to the results. And I'm sure once the campaign is launched, there'll be some wonderful media that we can tune into that isn't on the site yet. But so I know you've been working on some really amazing pieces for quite some time.
So let's get the website down again for everyone.
It's right. In the last minute here before we go.
Mythic Series.
The Mythic Series.
Yeah. MYTHIC. For all of humanity.
Mythic Series. Well, thank you.
Unearthing
so
the mythologies.
Now.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing in the Mythic Realms, my dear. It's Kaya Dorius. It's Dr. Future Show. We'll be seeing you next week, or hearing. You'll be hearing from us. Have a great week.
Namaste.
This is KSU Santa Cruz. Bye-bye.